welcome to the broadcast with Amanda, Shandy, and Colleen. My name is Colleen.
My name is Amanda.
And I'm Shandy.
Welcome to the show, everybody. This is season 5, episode 12, episode number 192. What? How's it going, everybody? I feel the same way. I just realized as I was saying that we are going to elect a new president, we are going to have a presidential election before we hit episode 200. So it's either going to be like, I'll let that sit there. It's either going to be like dot, 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 or dot, dot, dot.
Why must the ante must always be upped?
I know. It's incredibly stressful.
So it's been a really shitty fucking week.
How's it going? I suppose it has.
I think everybody by now has heard this week's broad topics, where we talked about the politics of the Supreme Court in the glorious Ruth Bader Ginsburg's passing on Friday night. I have to say, like, for me, since I found that out, and, you know, we had just finished family movie night, and, you know, everybody was, like, in a jovial mood, and I, you know, had my phone put down to finish the movie, because we were watching Onward, in which it's, you know, kind of a happy, sad ending. It's one of those Pixar movies, right, where you cry at the end, but it's a happy ending, and I was, like, laughing at. We had seen it in theaters. It was actually the last movie that we saw in theaters before the pandemic hit. Like, before everything shut down. Like, the pandemic was already going on. But we were like, oh, fuck, they're going to close things down next week. Or they're going to close things down. Like, this is our last chance. Children, we're going to the movies. And we're going to day drink and eat hot dogs and popcorn. But I think this is going to be one of those things that all liberals remember where they were when they found out that the fate of the Republic was actually really in jeopardy. I mean, it's always been in jeopardy, and her seat was always in jeopardy because she was always going to retire, or she was always either going to retire in January, right, under a new president, or probably not, with all of her health problems, probably not make it another 4 years. So her seat was always in jeopardy. It just got really, really, really real. And I don't know. I think everybody's going to remember where they were. Like, we were all there. I think I was making fun of Jay for crying at the end of the movie, like I always do when there's a movie or a TV show. Looking at you, Parks and Rec scene where Leslie and Ben get engaged and Jay sobs like a baby every single time, even though he knows it's going to happen. True story. Sometimes when Jay feels like he needs to release emotions, don't tell him I told you this, but he will totally. He will either watch the end of ED or he will put on the Leslie Ben engagement episode. Sorry.
Hey, there's no shame in that game. No.
Probably should have said that. Oh, Greg, we totally saw Sonic the Hedgehog before that, too. It was like right when we. Onwards was the last movie that Matt saw. Greg said Sonic was the last one. We saw that too. That was when we finally got our children to agree to go to movies and sit still. So it was like, you know, whole new ballgame. But womp womp. Anyway. I picked up my phone and I saw all the notifications had come in like 2 minutes earlier. And I was just like, no, 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 no. And Jay was like, what? And I was just like, I just was like, RBG, RBG. And he was like, are you sure? Are you sure? And he like goes to the WAPO app and opens that up immediately. And he's like, it's not on WAPO. And I was like, it's on fucking Twitter. It's true. Because that was the first thing I did was open up Twitter. I was like, oh, they're going to know. And yeah, it was just, I tried to hold together and I just sobbed and I broke down. And like, we do bedtime. We switch off with the kids each night. And I'm so happy it was a Zach night because at least he could understand. But like, I was physically like shaking and sobbing. And I was like, I'm so sorry. I can't control it. Like, it's okay to be sad, and I'm glad that like you can understand like it's okay to be sad, but then you got to pull yourself together and, you know, think of what comes next. And that, you know, I was like, I promise tomorrow I won't be sad. And he was like, you're scaring me a little bit right now. And I was like, I know, I'm really sorry. I'm very overcome with emotion because this is something that's very important and feels like a very big loss to me. And do you know what book that I saw? So I was like, so can you just please pick a book? And he's been into the Titanic, and one of the Titanic books he has literally goes into description
like
about
Mother
like
said.
Yep. Well, no, it goes into description about like he's like an elderly couple refused to separate. The immigrants that were going to America drowned beneath the ship with their children. It's like a really fucking graphic. He's like, the band plays on, and then the ship sinks and the music stops. Like, it's really
that's beautiful.
It's really disturbing on a good night. And I was like, but not Titanic. And you know what book that motherfucking kid made me read? Guess what book? The worst possible book that you can make a parent read on a good day, let alone a day where they're literally crying like the world is actually over, because it is. Guess what
Everybody
book?
Poops?
No. No. Anybody in the chat have any guesses? Oh, we're joined by our patrons live tonight. You want to become a patron.
My fourth grade teacher read that to our class. Like, I, yeah.
Patreon.com.
Stuck in there.
/ yeah. Jan Jack. No. Okay.
It's a very
come
important
on.
Message.
What book True. Makes every parent cry?
Midnight Sun, Moon.
Good Night Moon.
No.
Good Night Moon.
Good I'll love you forever.
I don't know. That wasn't a big one in our
he
house.
He made me read the book.
I know it's a book.
Book
that exists, but I don't
he
know.
He made
if that's
me read the book
had.
Where the mom dies at the end. Like, and she's, oh, God. Okay. You guys, I can't believe you guys don't know I'll Love You Forever and how that is like the worst book in the world, even though it's very beautiful. It's also the worst because you can't read it without crying. No. And it's so funny because Colkey, was texting me almost immediately with the RBG news, and he was checking in on me. He was like, I just want to make sure you're okay. And, you know, I stopped answering him for like a half an hour because I went to put Zach to bed, and, you know, he sent me something. He's like, I just want to make sure you're okay. Like, I just want to let you know I care and I'm concerned, because he's a great friend. And I was like, do you know what book that kid made me read? And he was like, I've got two guesses. Either I'll Love You Forever or The Giving Tree. I was like, The Giving Tree is also the worst.
The kid in The Giving Tree is the worst, really.
It's
a real teachable moment, that book. Mm-hmm.
No, but the thing is, no, that book has created monsters, because it's those yep. little shits that think that the Giving Tree is always going to fucking be there for them, and they can just yep. take. And then you know something? One day, the Giving Tree.
My comment. Hence yeah. teachable moments. Mm,
no.
Did you guys do
no.
a moment?
Because
you have
one
to
day.
Teach the child. This is not how you treat others that you love.
No.
You guys
no.
see that there was like a version of it that went around that somebody rewrote?
Yes,
where it was like
he actually
boundaries.
Sent, he sent that to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, I think that's great.
He sent that to me, but no, because that book teaches children that they can take because the world owes them something, a bunch of entitled little shits, and then when the tree is a stump, it teaches them that the tree always would have been a stump all along. It's not a man-made stump. It's not a you-made stump. You didn't do anything to create the stump. No, fuck that book. I hate that
book. So you're
book.
Saying that that book creates a generation of Republicans.
I'm not saying that. I'm just letting the cards fall, and you can interpret it as you will, but fuck that book. He's a very sweet tree, and he deserved better in his life.
Yep.
That's all I'm saying. Anyway, RBG died. Where were you guys?
I know phone Amanda, banking.
Yeah, Amanda told her yeah. story yesterday. Listen to this week's broad topics. I think it's really great. We talk a lot about, we don't talk so much about RBG's life in general, because we decided that we were going to talk more about that today, or RBG the person versus the politics, because that's what broad topics is about. But we talk about the courts. We had our favorite DP specialist was a big part of the conversation.
Yeah.
And he gave his insights as an attorney. But yeah, we had a really great chat. So Yeah, check that out. But yes, so Amanda told us a great story about phone banking and not having a button for that. And
not having a button for that. It's the fault in the system or user error. You know, the two come together and you're just fucked. Then you're talking to a Trump supporter and you don't know what to do.
You know what? Offer them a stump and be like, oh, this stump was always going to be a stump. There was nothing you could do to stop it. Oh, okay. Shandy, we haven't heard your RBG story yet.
There's a bunch of sirens outside, so hopefully that's not picking up too much. But I had just finished my work week. Franck and I had like one more episode of something that we're watching that we were going to like sit down and watch it and then go on a walk because it was like a really nice day. We finally have clean air again. So we were like super pumped for that. We sit down. He takes out his phone to like cast whatever it is we're watching on the TV and starts being like, no, fuck. And I'm like, what? And then it was worse than anything I could have imagined. And so then instead of watching whatever it was we were going to watch, we like turned on the news and sat in front of the news and started, of course, like texting with my family about how we're just basically fucked for the next few generations. And texting with you guys and generally checking in on people and seeing how everyone was doing. And never did go on that walk. Hmm. So yeah, it was a really somber evening.
Yeah.
Terrible Friday night. And as I mentioned yesterday, like it was weird because then like I went to bed and I woke up the next morning and I had this moment of like, you know, like with the election, like I went to bed crying and I woke up crying. It was like there, it was just continuous. There was no sort of like moment of reprieve. With this, I like woke up and I had this momentary, like total like forgetfulness of the day before. I like got up, I was super charged, ready to go, like happy, oh, Saturday morning. And then like 2 seconds later it all came back.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Well, it just I think when it happened, it just felt so like not real life. I mean, and not to say that like the election didn't feel that way too, because it 100% did. Like it just didn't feel real. But I think this was such a way, because it was kind of something like, you know, she was old, the woman. This was her fifth bout with cancer.
And they were all, you know, the
it was
bad
always
kind of
within
cancer.
The realm of possibility.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, and even saying that, it still felt so impossible.
Yeah. Well, she officiated. I thought she'd call it forever. Honestly.
She officiated.
Yeah, like, cognitively, I knew that's not, you know, everything you're saying, Amanda, like, yes, right. It was likely. But I just, part of me, maybe that was the denial, was just like, no, she's exactly, like, how many times does she beat cancer? She'll be fine. She'll live till she's 150. We're good.
She officiated a wedding on like September 1st.
Yeah.
And she didn't look particularly like sickly, but there's been a lot of really great tributes and articles and obituaries that have come out about her. Nina Totenberg had one that you guys, I had read that the other day. There was one from a woman at the New York Times whose name is escaping me, but hers was also really great too. And she mentioned that she had spoken to RBG back in July, and RBG mentioned that both of her adult children, James and Jane, were now living with her. And she said, like, at that moment, she got scared because she was like, I know she had fallen. I know that she had cancer again. And but your adult children don't move in with you unless you're really bad. Mm-hmm. And she said that was the moment that her heart just dropped. And she was like, just really nervous for her friend. So, yeah. But, you know, she did the wedding. And I honestly didn't think. But fuck cancer. I hate it.
it's a pretty brutal disease.
Yeah.
Claims far too many.
It does.
Reminder that Joe Biden's mission in life is to eradicate cancer.
That actually is true.
Good job.
The, yeah.
We had bought tickets to the drive-in for Dirty Dancing.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
And so that was Saturday, and you know, so it was like already bought. Like, so we went, and I think it was actually really good. We saw some friends that we hadn't seen for a while. You know, parked our cars next to theirs, and you know, That's a great movie to see in a drive-in.
Yeah, it holds up. That's a movie that holds up.
Okay.
Yeah.
We took the kids to the park on Sunday and had a picnic. So that was really fun. And then we played little baseball with them, catches and pitching to them and hitting. And it was also just a really nice, and it helped a lot that the weather was beautiful here this mm-hmm. weekend. And I took a walk on Sunday morning and the wildflowers were just overgrowing on the trail. And it was just nice and breathable. And, I had this moment of, okay, breathe, think, it's going to be okay. Don't know what the fight looks like.
Yeah.
But gotta believe something right now. Otherwise, you're not going to make it. you're going to make yourself sick. So I still have those moments where I am like shit, I don't see the way out of this. I don't see the way out of this. But I don't know. I can't believe. I have to believe that there is a way and we just don't see it yet.
Yeah.
I do. Yeah. We have definitely come back from worse before, although this is pretty, actually, I mean, have we in ways?
I mean, in modern planet, in our lifetime,
the actual planet has never really been up, on the line, but yeah, there's definitely been things. Sorry. I got distracted because I saw in the chat that JP has never seen Dirty Dancing. And neither has Greg.
Wow, guys.
It's a good one. You really should.
It's an excellent movie.
It's a great movie. It holds up on rewatches.
It's just great. I mean, never mind the fact that they're supposed to be 18 and 20 and they're really 30 plus. But that's
why that Jennifer Grey was that young.
Yeah. Well, her character is supposed to just have finished high school, so.
Yeah.
Speaking of elderly, frail women, though, I took Fiona to the vet also on Friday.
Oh, good news.
Well, I mean, questions answered, so that's good. She's had this voracious appetite recently, and turns out she has hyperthyroidism, which apparently is very common in older cats because she is officially an elderly kitty at 14 years old. So now she has to take half a pill twice a day. So it's one pill per day, which she so far, we haven't had a problem in giving that to her, especially when we put it in a treat. So that's good. It's not a hard pill for her to take. And it's also not very expensive, which is great, but it makes it more complicated next time we want to leave and go somewhere. I know you don't just need somebody to stop by and feed the cats. Now you need to make sure that she takes her thyroid medication.
Ugh. Right. So. And that's a pain in the ass.
Yeah. And twice a day. So, but yeah, so that's good. I mean, she... we had noticed some things for a while, and so it was good to have the answers, and our vet's awesome. So
that's
good. That part's good, but poor little Fifi.
Aww. Oh, poor girl. I also, Captain is due for an old man appointment as well that I've been dragging my feet on just because, we were there so many times with the cone and all that stuff. Right. I feel like, do you really need a checkup? Didn't you do all that stuff then? But whatever. But yeah, so this weekend, unlike you guys trying to find positivity in the world, I doubled down on the feelings of doom and gloom. And we watched The Social Dilemma.
Oh my God, I was going to say, we watched that too. Most of my social media was off my phone, but now 100% of it is off my phone. So if I don't respond to you on Instagram, that's why. I'm only going to check it on my computer. Sorry.
I need to watch this.
It just made me.
So
it made me really depressed in a lot of ways, but it was also oh good. Yeah. No, social media doesn't have that control over my life. I've really kind of been distancing myself from it in the past year or so. But yeah, I think the picture it paints is very bleak.
Is it? No, so
it's no, but I mean, basically say like, well, I don't know if I should spoil anything, but
yeah,
like,
no, but let's not spoil it because I think you do really have to go on the journey with it.
Yeah.
I think it's better if you go in completely cold.
Definitely.
Does it? True. Does it but talk about?
I'll just say that it does explain certain things, certain phenomena that we see today. You're like.
Yes.
It's so, not just what I thought. It's like what I thought plus all this other stuff.
But way worse.
So wait, does it highlight the fact that most people are legitimately radicalized through Facebook because they get suggested groups that you might want to join that is like white supremacist groups or the fucking QAnon groups? Does it like really?
But it goes into the psychology of why that is.
Okay, because I've read articles about
how we got there. It's not just that it's happening because everyone knows it's happening. It's the steps that Silicon Valley took to directly get us to where we are and the psychology behind the design of these various tools that were designed with the best of intentions to be tools, but have, you know, become a Frankenstein.
Okay. We're going to watch it. We're going to watch it because
it's super worth it.
Okay.
Yeah. It's great. It really is great. Cool. It's like doom and gloom, but it also does it leave you with a bit of a hopeful note. Like all these people that,
I don't know.
Are really painting a very awful picture, but like at the same point, they're like, you know, things can change. We're not past the point of no return.
I don't know. I feel like the train has left a station for a lot of them. Like they are the QAnon people. They're worse than the Tea Partiers because there's more of them and they're fucking insane.
But it's like so much bigger than
Cool.
It's like holistically looking at the entire picture.
Okay. Because Facebook is the fucking worst. I spent the whole summer only checking it like once or twice a day just because I couldn't deal with it. So it's the Facebook and Insta are still on my phone, but I really only check Twitter on my phone during the day. I never really check the others, which I'm terrible. Somebody will send me an Instagram like message and I won't get it for like 4 days because I'm like, you know, I don't have push notifications, so I like never see that it's there.
Instagram's the only one I check because it's like that's what I do to kind of like take a break because it's just like it's visual. It's visual. I don't have to think. I can just kind of like
my sister and Jay look at a few things
and then put it down and move on.
Yeah, they're both pretty much Instagram only, Jay and Caitlin. So and I always feel kind of bad because sometimes Caitlin will send me something on Instagram and I won't see it for like a week and I'm like, oh, sorry. But
I think the psychology of like social media is interesting in that regard too. The fact that like there are these different platforms and each one serves a different function that appeals to people for different reasons.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. I will watch it for next week.
It's totally worth it. Yeah. I had cut down a lot on a lot of things, but I still had Instagram on my phone. Kind of like for the same reason as you, Amanda, but I found myself like just checking it all the time. And like, then I started looking at the stories. So that, and then there's like a new round of stories all the time. So it was just sort of constant. And you take all those minutes and add them up. And it's just so dumb. So I was just like,
what's going to happen to the broadcast Instagram? Because you guys were the ones that were keeping it alive.
Well, and to be fair, like, you know, the only reason I keep these things on my phone is because that's really the only time I look at them. Like for me, Facebook and Instagram were like when I was commuting. So I think that's why I don't check these things often anymore because I'm not commuting.
Yeah.
So it's like, it really was a nice, clean sort of break. But yeah, it's like, you know, I'm going into the city tomorrow for a doctor's appointment. It's like, I can't take these off my phone. Like, what am I going to do for the hour on the train?
Take a book.
Ugh, books are heavy.
That's what I used to when I used to commute when I lived in Paris. Like I would sometimes have a 45-minute commute, and it was, you know, like this was before smartphones,
right?
I always had a book with me, and it was great. Like I'd get a lot of reading done.
I would do that too, but I listen to podcasts, and it's because I have a short attention span. It's like I need the visual stimulation in addition to like the auditory stimulation. Mm. So then you're not just, you know, it gives you a place to look.
Yeah.
Okay. So Shandy, are you officially retired then from broadcast Instagramming?
I mean, at least like for now. I mean, to be fair, I haven't posted anything on broadcast Instagram for a while. But yeah, even like the reposts on stories, like I don't know. There's some good stuff, but also it's just meant to get a rise out of people, and it's just meant to make you feel a certain way. And I don't like being riled up. So I know I did a little bit of that on the broadcast Insta, more of it probably on my own Insta. But I think definitely for now I'm taking a break, but I honestly don't think that it will be that noticed. Cause I wasn't that active on the broadcast Instagram. It would come in spurts. Okay. So this will just be like a time between spurts.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
Fair enough.
But I need to take it off my phone because otherwise I'm going to check. Like I'm sitting around, I'll just like check Instagram and it's just so.
Okay. So let's put a pause in this, pin in this now, because I don't know everything, like the reasons why all you guys are talking other than the fact that, you know, they're the worst. So let me catch up and then I can contribute to this discussion positively.
Cool.
But I'm not getting rid of Twitter on my phone. I'm just saying.
I don't generally. Nope.
I don't generally tweet from my phone, but that's my Insta. So good times. All right. I look forward to this with dread.
It's important. I feel more knowledgeable for having seen it.
Look, my only fear is whatever this is, if it only pushes people on the left off and it keeps all the people on the right off and it's, you know, and everybody's being radicalized, it makes me fear a little bit more for our country. But
There is that. It's like the people that really should see this film probably won't ever. And like,
right. So then happens when it goes unchecked?
You could drive yourself insane thinking that way.
Right. All right. Okay. Well, all right. I will watch it before next week. Everybody else watch it too. I can't wait to hate watch it. Okay. Or hate Facebook it. Whatever. You know what I mean. Matt said in the chat, thank you for saying spurts a lot. # that's what she said.
I really did. Yes. You're welcome.
Moving back to, you know, the topic at hand. I would like to celebrate the Honorable Ruth Bader Ginsburg's life. We've all, everybody on here has watched the RBG documentary, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I wanted to rewatch it, but have not gotten to it yet. I think that'll be a this weekend thing.
Cool. So I think everybody knows her story, how she got started, all of the wonderful things she did early on in life. One of a handful of women that went to Harvard Law. Her husband got testicular cancer. She took his notes in addition to her own classwork. While he was going through radiation, he had a very, very low chance of recovery. And, you know, they pulled through together. She learned how to sleep on 2 hours a night. She had he got a job in New York. She asked Harvard if she could transfer to Columbia and still get a Harvard degree. And they said no. And I guess it was a very sore subject decades later. But anyway, so essentially, like, she went through all these things. She was pregnant. She was in Oklahoma because Marty was in the military. She applied for a job. She got it. Then she revealed she was pregnant. The offer was rescinded or she didn't get it, whatever. And she got like a really shitty like typist job and just thought that's the way things were. Eventually, she took a job in Norway. Norway, right? Was it Norway?
Sweden.
Thank you.
This was like a little known fact about her, which I thought was fascinating. She learned Swedish to go to Sweden for like a year.
I know that's some mayor paid shit.
To study their judicial system. And I'd kind of known about this. A friend of mine gave me a book about RBG. It was like in her own words that it's essentially like a collection of all of her law writings over the years. So I've started it and put it down because it's law and it's so above my head and it's so very dense. But in sort of reading about things about, you know, all the wonderful things that have come out in the past couple of weeks, that triggered that, like, there was a little piece of that in the book. And like, it was one of her, I think it was like her Columbia law professor had recommended her for this. And then the two of them wrote a book about it. And I think it was that same woman, Colleen from New York Times.
Yes.
In her piece was sort of saying that that was really one of the things that set her off on her path for all the feminist and social justice and
yes, because that was in the Daily.
Know, equality, the work that she did moving forward, be seeing how the Swedish system was structured.
Right, that women really were more equal in Sweden versus, you know, they were not really full agency people in the United States.
Right. There was like a female judge that was like 8 months pregnant, like presiding over the court. And she was like, what?
Yeah, she was like, man. Yeah.
They wouldn't even let me have a desk job. Yeah.
And I think that that's, you know, how, and we've talked about this so many times. That's how I think a lot of people, you know, you hear, why can't we have, you know, healthcare for everybody? And it's like, well, it would never work here. It's too blah, 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 blah. And then you go to other countries and you see how something works and you're like, but why can't we do this again?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But this is just like a perfect example that like she saw that and then she made it happen here.
Yes.
Like a lot of the equalities we have are a direct result of cases that RBG put before the Supreme Court.
Right, right.
As a litigator and, you know, all her time with the ACLU. And
And she did it in an incredibly strategic way where she picked cases that she knew would get through to the all-male court and would therefore, like, it might not be like progressives today. They might not pick the same cases to argue because they might, you know, aim for the stars. And was she famous for saying like true change comes in steps or stages or whatever. And like maybe back then, clearly back then that was the case where she laid the groundwork. She got people to see her point of view by pointing it out. Like, here's how it relate to you if you were that, and like was very just strategic about it. And it's just very brilliant.
Yeah. And successful. Like, bitch got stuff done.
Yeah. Like my van is in my name and I don't think Jay's a co-signer on it. And if this was pre-RBG, I wouldn't be able to have signed for that car without somebody else. Or, you know, a woman wouldn't be able to own a mortgage, like have a mortgage to herself unless there was a male co-signer. And just all these crazy things that you think about that you take for granted now and you don't stop to think, hey, who are the people, who is the woman that helped make this happen? And she was also... she was very gracious. It was in the NPR article where one of her first briefs, she credited the feminists who had been making the case to the public before she made the case to the Supreme Court, and she listed them as co-authors on the brief before the Supreme on the you know mm-hmm. case before the Supreme Court. And they weren't attorneys. They weren't like women that were working on it. But the ideas came from those women. So she thought that they should be co-authors. And I thought that was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. She did some good things. And so they actually talked about this all over town this weekend. But because, you know, how we spoke about on Broad Topics that Roe v. Wade is going to be a big deal. And she made some comments on Roe v. Wade where she thought that they should not have been as broad and sweeping in shutting down abortion as they were, because she felt that it legally left it open for people to make arguments, and rather they should have shut it down in a smaller measure or less vague, less sweeping terms, so that Congress could then take it up and pass it into law instead of relying on just the Supreme Court decision to make it so. Mm. She was very big on equal branches of power, and if the Supreme Court was going to do something, then Congress needed to turn it into a law.
Yep. Well, I really respect that, like, she wasn't afraid to speak her mind even when it might have felt antithetical to, like, the liberal cause. That, like, she always seemed to have very good judgment and sort of knows right from wrong.
Or she knew the way to truly accomplish it in the long game. Yeah. She knew the long game.
Yeah, she knew the long game.
Where so many times, how many times do we scream, like, burn it all down, and then we're like, and then what comes next?
Right, like, it's just, it's composure under pressure, I guess, is really what it is.
Yeah.
But I'm also losing my mind over Ro's comment in the chat.
Yes. Okay. So Ro says, on a much lighter note, Emilio Estevez sent this message to Richard Schiff, who posted it on social media. My mom and Justice Ginsburg were in Lamaze class together in New York when mom was pregnant with Charlie Sheen, and Ruth was pregnant with James. They were born 5 days apart. Oh, man.
Amazing.
Well, first, because I read them backwards, too.
Yes, me too.
Like, I did, too.
And I was just like, and oh, I, was like, I was, didn't know Ro had yeah, brother named James.
I thought the same thing. Charlie.
I know Ro grew up in Brooklyn, so this is she is telling her own story.
I thought the same thing.
Totally. Which is also why I lost my mind a little bit.
Yes, I went on that same ride with you.
Yeah. I was, like, speaking words, but I was seeing that, and I was like, it's so good. I don't know what's happening.
There is a wonderful article in USA Today that actually has RBG's most memorable opinions from, or rather decisions, like in the affirmation or dissents. And, you know, it's just, it's really great little, like, little blurbs of some of the things that she actually didn't, that she actually did for the country. Because, again, I think we talked about this on the broad topics so many times, and it's incredibly sexist. A woman's history, especially in, like, politics, is always boiled down to whether or not they are pro or anti-choice. And, you know, most women are, all women, I would say, are much more than that. And RBG was certainly a woman that was larger than life in her diminutive little self. She is so short, guys, like, so short and so quiet. When we met her, that room had never been quieter, I guarantee it, because we were just like, okay, we don't want to miss a word. She's so soft-spoken. Like, she did, like, she had the power of the pen, because she just had so many great decisions and dissents. And I know, you know, the most famous one was the dissent, Shelby, with the Voting Rights Act, where she said, throwing out pre-clearance when it has worked and is continuing to work to stop discriminatory changes is like throwing away your umbrella in a rainstorm because you are not getting wet. And she always had great, you know, great things to say like that, just to really just make you understand what it was. Such as, what's the other one? Oh, the Ledbetter case. So this woman, Lily Ledbetter, found out, what was it, Amanda, was it after she had retired that she...
Yes. She was no longer, like, it was no longer relevant.
But she found out that she was a government employee that was paid significantly less than her male coworkers for the entire time that she had been a government employee. And she sued because she was like, oh, this is freaking wrong. And, of course, you know, this was during the period, I believe, when RBG was in the minority, like, she was the only woman on the court because there was a six or seven year period of time when it was just her as the only woman, and she called it the dark time because she didn't like being the only woman on the court. And of course, this did not this didn't pass. They said that, you know, the statute of limitations was over or whatever. And in RBG's dissent, she basically said, like, all right, Congress, your move. So, and then it was the first act that Obama signed into law when he was inaugurated in 2008.
Yeah, that was, I didn't realize, that was news to me, uncovering that this week. I thought that was really pretty amazing.
Yeah. So, just so many great things. I'm going to go through some of the quotes real quick that my mom sent me, and then I'm going to tell a really funny RBG story that I saw on Twitter this weekend that tickled me. I read it like three times because it made me laugh so many times. I was like, I love this. So some famous RBG quotes before we go, before we move on. She said, okay, so as we said, real change, enduring change happens one step at a time. I would like to be remembered as someone who used whatever talent she had to do her work for the best of her ability. The seagulls are coming, guys.
They have their own favorite quotes they would like to share, and they just don't understand human culture of having to wait their turn.
Who's, well, neither do I, clearly. Who speaks seagull, though?
Side note, Monterey is where Birds was filmed, so.
Ooh. Oh. Probably one of the most famous RBG quotes. I don't think it's the most famous, but one of the. Women belong in all the places where decisions are being made. It shouldn't be that women are the exception.
Yes.
Let's see. So often in life, things that you regard as an impediment turn out to be great good fortune. Let's hope, RBG. Let's hope. I'm a very strong believer in listening and learning from others. And I would like to interpret this that she means learning how she can then turn an argument against them. I feel like this is a very roundabout way of saying that. This is one that I think I could benefit from. Reacting in anger or annoyance will not advance one's ability to persuade.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. Okay, this is the one that I was talking about before. Fight for the things you care about, but do it in a way that that will lead others to join you. And that's the quote on the Christmas ornament that Amanda got us.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I've always loved that one.
That is definitely something that I think we can all remember, because we live in, you know, the worst timeline with the worst people. And sometimes it's really hard to navigate between when it is your job to teach someone, to be taught, or to persuade someone, or to just fight with somebody. It's really, really hard. So I don't know. Use your best judgment, but I guess, I don't know. Try not to be, you know, super aggressive with them. Let's see. I love this one. In every good marriage, it helps sometimes to be a little deaf. And I love the quote that goes with that, that from Marty, where he was like, Ruth doesn't give me any advice about cooking, and I don't give her any advice about law, and it works out really well for us.
Oh, they just sound like they were just so perfect for each other. Like a true, true partnership.
Yeah. As far as equality, a gender line helps to keep women not on a pedestal, but in a cage. If you wanted to be a true professional, do something outside of yourself. I love that RBG was very much like, you know, the path to being successful, to being self-fulfilled, is actually to help other people, not yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she very much prescribed to the notion of leaving the ground a little better for you being there.
Yeah, agree.
And I think that's the thing that I have been thinking about the most. And I mean, in general, that's something I think about all the time and how I kind of approach life. But now more than ever, it's how can you leave the planet a little better than you found it?
Yeah, yeah.
And she's just like the living embodiment of that.
I don't know. She was. And I don't know. I hope we can give it to her. And then finally, the last one, which I think is her most famous quote probably, is people ask me sometimes, when will there be enough women on the court? And my answer is, when there are 9. People are shocked.
That's my favorite.
Yeah.
People are shocked. But there had been 9 men, and nobody's ever raised a question about that.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. When there are
love 9. It.
Okay, I got to finish up with this story. This is from Twitter, and honestly, I thought it was hilarious. So this is actually from a former law clerk of RBG named Scott Hershowitz. And he says, today, a happy RBG memory, the time that I talked her into talking trash. In OT06, which I think must be 2006, the October term of 2006, maybe? Mm. I don't know. The clerks had a fantasy baseball league. Some chambers had teams, some individual clerks had teams, and Justice Alito wanted a team for himself, not his clerks. So I guess, you know, there's either like your singular team, everybody's combined on a team, you know, whatever. The last week of the term, the Ginsburg clerks were matched against Justice Alito's team. RBG was on the losing end of decisions a lot that term, but not this time. We destroyed him 10 to nothing. The next day, I went to see RBG in her office. I explained that her clerks were playing fantasy baseball against other clerks and Justice Alito. And I described in some detail the sheer dominance our team had displayed. She looked at me like I was insane, which I was. The end of court's term is kind of busy. Then I said, Justice, I took the liberty of typing up a memo, which you might want to send to Justice Alito. And then I slid it across her desk. She stooped over and studied it for what seemed like forever. And then she looked up and said, what is fantasy baseball? So I started over. I think it's the only time I ever had to tell her something twice. Back she went to reading it. The memo was all of two sentences, but she looked it over like it was an opinion. Then she smiled and said, I'll sign it. copies to the conference, I asked, and she said yes. So copies were soon handed to every justice. The memo said, Dear Sam, my law clerks inform me that last week their fantasy baseball team defeated yours by a score of 10-0. I know you are busy, but we expect more, even from the junior justice. Respectfully, Ruth. A short while later, Justice Alito replied. He acknowledged that RBG was entitled to gloat, but he added that with the end of the term, he planned to dedicate more time to his team so our success wouldn't last long. Shortly after that, an Alito clerk called to complain. The justice had assigned him to manage his team. RBG chuckled when I told her. That's the part of her that didn't often come across in public. She wasn't beyond a bit of mischief. I know. I love that story.
That's good.
I think yeah. That is where we're going to end it. But
perfect.
Yes. Good. Rest in power, glorious RBG.
Yes. You made the world better for being here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. I guess we'll take a quick commercial break and then we'll come back. We don't have a ton of feedback tonight, so we should power through this pretty quickly. All right. We'll be right back. All right. We are back and we are ready to get into some Facyback. And bold things of Facyback is from our good friend Matt Loves TV, who is also in the chat right now. And he says, well, we could all use a pick-me-up this week, so I recommend Pen 15 on Hulu, since their new season was released on Friday. It's just awesome. What they finished before the shutdown, but I will take it.
Cool. I definitely need to check that out.
Yeah. I need to watch that whole show.
Ah, yeah, I enjoyed it.
Any of it.
Oh, I enjoyed it. I really I blew through the first season, so that's exciting that there's more. Okay, so I see that there are 7 episodes. And the first season has 10. So it'll be interesting to see kind of what that turns out to be, if it's just what they filmed before COVID and weren't planning on ending there.
Yeah.
Ending the season there.
Interesting.
Well, I'm going to check it out in general, like from the beginning. So
you guys will both really like it.
I figured.
It.
We never finished Broad City. We need to finish it.
Oh my God.
Me neither. I tried. I started. Guys, I don't think it's for me.
Really?
What? I am now 4 episodes in, and like, I don't know if it's just because I'm coming to it late and they really are these sort of time capsules of like the time in which they were created.
Oh, they are. Like, and they are they're both the worst. But I mean,
yeah.
The season finale where they have the birthday party with in the birthday dinner in the restaurant with the two of them, and Ilana is allergic to shellfish is literally like the most I have laughed in 2020, right? So hilarious.
Yeah. Like, I'm just sort of like, how far do I have to get into the show before I start?
It's pretty enjoying funny. It?
Do it a little bit more. Okay. Maybe you need to know the characters a little bit better. It's so good.
Say, I think that maybe. Jay...
I have started on The Great, though. I did get back into that, and I'm into it. The first good. Episode, I was a little like, nah, but I am just good. In episode 4, I think, and yes. I am on board. I am into it. So there's one.
Okay.
There's one wholehearted.
Yes.
Right? Maybe you just need
a little waffling. Yeah. Like, oh man, like it's so good. It really is. I love it. It's so funny.
Broad City, not The Great, right? Okay.
Love The Great also.
Yeah.
I'm wondering because, like, even though you've watched like 4 episodes of each, since the episodes are not at all the same length, you've had a lot more exposure to The Great.
I don't know. I feel like Broad City definitely does grow on you the more you you start to care about some of the characters, especially the side characters.
Because it becomes more and more funny.
Yeah, because okay.
So many recurring bits. So many. I love it.
And in the chat, Matt says, how is the person in Brooklyn finding it hard to get into Broad City?
Because I don't know. And part of me wonders if it's the same thing where, like, I had a huge issue with girls as well. And I wonder if it's the same thing that, like, I've lived in New York during that time period in my life. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I don't know if that then colors the reason why I don't like the show.
Well, also, Lena that,
like,
Dunham
it becomes
the worst.
This sort of almost like it's trying too hard. Yeah. And, but, like, I don't know if maybe that's what I'm bringing into it and why I'm not getting as much out of it and enjoying it as much. And maybe I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, but Lena Dunham is the worst, though.
Yeah,
so there's
that. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, not to compare those two shows. They are completely different. And I mean, Girls is its own clusterfuck of things that are wrong with it.
I know.
That are completely separate of Broad City. But for the case of being, a struggling girl in her early 20s in New York City. That's the only comparison.
It's kind of like how Sex and the City definitely would not hold up nowadays.
No. I actually, the beginning of quarantine was kind of watching. I started watching a little bit of those episodes of like when they would have been 35 because I just wanted to check in. And like now that I am that age, I wanted to check back in and like
you
see
were
how
that
I
age.
Felt about it.
Uh-huh.
It was an interesting social experiment.
I bet.
Especially like in the early days of quarantine, we're like, what else were you doing? Like, it's like Daniel was working crazy hours. So I was like spending a lot of time alone watching, like free to watch, like what I wanted to watch. So it was a very interesting social experiment.
Yeah.
I don't recommend it.
I kind of want to rewatch Sex and the City just because. I don't know. I have such a different time in my life, like watching that. Even in retrospect, like they're all the worst. It's like literally like Aiden is the only good person on that show, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think I could stomach it on a rewatch.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't completely without redeeming things. Like I think there were parts of that show that I think resonated with people for real and valid reasons. But yes, the general portrayal of what it's like to live in New York City. Like, and just be like a normal working person.
But again, the time that it came out was also a different time, right? Like, what was it, 99 it first started?
It was like the late 90s, early 2000s. Like,
we weren't in like full DEFCON America's dying mode yet. So.
Right, but still, like
there
a
was
writer
still...
for like a mid-level paper with just a column could not afford that many.
No, she couldn't. But that was the part.
Like, just
of...
couldn't.
But that was the. But see, that part didn't bother me as much because that was just escapism, right? Like it. That didn't.
I think so,
me.
But I think the problem is a lot of people that the show's audience weren't like New York City people. It was people.
But
from,
I was
you know,
a New York
across
City
the country
person.
That you're sort of watching, and it doesn't feel like escapism because you don't necessarily know it to be such. Like you're
but
just like
it was to
that
me.
Must be what it's like to live there.
Oh no, not for me though. I knew,
but it's different. It's different.
Like to me, it was escapism. The thing that to me makes it horrible is their general beings, their behavior, their like views on like you know just I don't. that's the thing I didn't like. Greg said, though, to get back to the chat, I always enjoyed what I saw of Broad City.
And which means that he hasn't seen it all. Finish it.
Yeah. Like me. That's what she said. Matt said that it was from 1998 to 2004. But getting into the speaking of Matt, Matt's what she said. And then we've got two quick emails and then we're going to get out of here.
All right. Like five at the same time now?
400. Could you imagine?
Doesn't go anywhere where you're expecting it to go.
Okay. I think they're real.
You must think about using it that way.
Oh, let me start again.
It's also great to get one right before lunch. Mm. It's called a nooner.
I did something that I never do.
Thank you, Matt.
But you know what? Short batch, but good batch.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a solid collection. I like the well curated list.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, neat and tidy.
That's what she said.
I'm just giving good examples, so if you know, for next week.
All right. Next up we have Butter Shemales. The first email is from Maggie.
Do you want me to take it?
Yes. You remember back in the day where we used to color code assign emails to each other beforehand?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, we've really lapsed in our older years.
It's been like 2 seasons.
I can start doing that again when I copy and paste them over.
It's fine. Like, it's just so funny that we used to be so diligent about that. Yeah. Now, it's two seasons. Kind of
like, I like it. It's, you know, it adds a little spontaneity. It's how it keeps the relationship fresh.
I don't know whether this is a bonus, a blooper, or to just keep it in.
That's what
she said, so we're keeping it in.
Make it all three. It's like a choose your own adventure. Okay, all right, let's get back to Maggie, shall we? So Maggie has written to us about the Princess Bride reunion.
Okay.
Okay. So she forwarded us the email. I believe Maggie was telling us about this on Broad Topics yesterday.
I got this email too because I donated for the Princess Bride reunion and I got this same email this evening.
Nice.
Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. So essentially it says, we're excited to announce a replay of the Princess Bride reunion is now available. It asks you to chip in a little money so that you can see it. Our last week's event was massive. Princess Bride reunion ended up trending #2 on Twitter and became a real cultural moment for tens of thousands of Americans and their family. It was even a joy away from chaos, division pouring out of the White House. It gave us a chance to escape from Trump's America, yada, yada, yada. We all need to do fun things. and raised funds to defeat Trump in the must-win state of Wisconsin. So this was it was a fundraiser for Wisconsin Democrats.
Yes.
And it goes on.
We did talk about this on Broad Topics yesterday, the fundraiser in general. This is just the replay of the fundraiser, which the actual fundraiser, the reading, was pulled offline. So you couldn't go back and like rewatch it at any point. This is to donate so you can have access to watch the replay.
Gotcha.
Which we might do because it's really, really great. And Jay didn't get to see it. And I feel like for Wisdems, it might be $27 worth it. Like it was really fun. It was
so I do love The Princess Bride. Well, it is one of my favorites.
Like the thing that like really made it was, okay. So first of all, Billy Crystal built his own fucking set behind him and then wore a little elf's hat to like get in character, like a Dobby hat. Okay. Not even kidding. And then freaking Manny Patinkin went all in. Like he went like full on like
as he is. Yeah.
Yeah. Like he went full Manny Patinkin and it was awesome. Like
yeah, that's not surprising.
It was great. Like oh, it was awesome. Like And then, like, Robin Wright doesn't age, and she's beautiful. And then the Q&A part, the woman that plays
There's a Q&A.
Yeah, there is.
Oh, man, that is worth $27.
Yeah, and then in the Q&A, the woman that plays the witch, whose name I'm escaping, Matt, I know you know it, or Greg, you might know it, too.
Is it Tracy Ullman? No, Tracy Ullman's not in Princess Bride. Now I'm just seeing the witch from Men in Tights.
It'll come to you. But like somebody asks her, like, what do you have to say about Donald Trump? And she goes, liar. It is great. It literally, like, look, if Mulan, that was partially filmed in the Xinjiang province of China, where they are literally locking up human beings in a concentration camp, is worth $30 of your time, this is worth $27. Bring your own beer. Bring your own popcorn. It's great. Like, it is. Oh, Carol Kane. Thank you, Matt. Thank you.
Cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's really great.
Yeah. Sorry, Amanda. I didn't mean to cut you off, but.
You obviously knew a lot more about it. You probably should have just read it to begin with.
Well, honestly, I had read this email this evening already and sent it to Jay and was like, you want to watch this weekend? So, like, I had already read the email. I had that advantage over you. Sorry, my chair's
off. Threw me to the wolves. But yes, I am sold. I am totally going to throw them my $27 and I'm going to watch the crap out of this weekend.
Yes, definitely do. And the URL is http://grassroots.wisdems.org/princess-bride-replay. I'll put in the show notes. But I'm pretty sure you can just Google the Princess Bride replay and it will probably be the first like 30 results in your search engine.
Oh, so good.
Yeah. Okay. And then we will finish up with an Andy update. And then I actually have an Alex update, a good Ooh. Alex update. And
oh, good.
I will finish with that. So yeah, Andy and Lexi, go.
Well, okay.
Go with the Andy. I'll go with the Lexi. Okay.
Okay. So this week in Andy's social distancing, Andy writes in, "Hey, broads, another slow week in my semi-quarantine, but it looks like we're all going to get fucked soon. It has been one of the roughest weeks in one of the roughest years of our lifetime. With the passing of RBG adding more uncertainty to an already ridiculous amount of uncertainty, it's hard not to feel completely overwhelmed and helpless as awful people continue to act with no regard for anyone but their supporters and only encourage them to be the worst possible version of themselves. At the same time, people who are supposed to hold them accountable either don't seem to care or are completely outnumbered. It's such a massive systemic problem that I don't know how to even begin to help work on it. I can't even find someone who will have sex with me. How am I going to work on changing minds and bringing people to our side?"
They are not mutually exclusive.
Mm.
"But I want to try to be optimistic since usually you read my emails last and I want to maybe end the show with some modicum of hope. Obviously, the passing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg is a huge loss for all the people who looked up to her and the causes she believed in and fought for with everything she got, even in her darkest days. Her life certainly offers a lot of examples for how we have to be now that she's gone. She knew the things she fought for were bigger than herself and would still be problems after she left us, but she used her abilities and time on this earth to make a dent in it. We all have to continue her legacy against the people who are carrying on the legacies of fascism, racism, and general dickheadedness." "While people come and go, it's always important to remember that the way things are now isn't necessarily the way they'll be. Sure, things look like the Republicans are just going to be hypocritical asshole gatekeepers, but this isn't the end of the story."
Hear, hear.
Mm-hmm.
"There are so many ways this can play out and ramifications short and long term of this that we can't predict. While I'm still in a funk of 2020 made worse by this past week, I hope that I can find the ways I can help out and keep her legacy going. Hashtag I'm 6 feet from hers, Andy." And Andy, I would just like to say something that we can all do right now is go to the previously read email and donate our $27 for the Princess Bride reunion, because that goes to the Wisconsin Dems.
Yep.
Very important swing state.
Very important.
Thank you, though, Andy, for that bit of hope. Honestly, like, that really meant a lot. Like, I was trying to end the RBG segment with some hope where I, when I was talking about, like, I don't know what the fight looks like, but I know it's not over. And you actually worded that more perfectly than I could have even thought. I actually might go back and edit some of what I said out because you said it all, like, way better.
You're here. Well said, Andy.
But you did remind me, RBG, as we talked about, was always thinking of the long game, always thinking of how to get people to agree with her, always thinking about how to inspire the masses. And I truly believe that when she dictated her deathbed statement to her granddaughter, my most fervent wish is that I will be replaced by the next president or whatever. I think she knew that Mitch McConnell was going to be like, what? I didn't hear anything. What? Like, right. And I think that that was her directive to the rest of us to keep up the fight. And I think that was her. And I don't know this for sure, but like, I feel like that was her last gift to everybody in terms of like forward thinking and thinking ahead. And of course, they're not going to honor her wishes. And I think she knew that they weren't going to honor her wishes. And legally, they don't have to honor her wishes because legally they can fill that seat.
Yep.
That's just what it is. That's just what it is. And I think that she knew that. And I think that by saying that, she knew she was. She hoped that she would ignite the
at least someone the people have a, some to, semblance of a moral center.
No, I think she knew that she was going to ignite the people to do what we can do. That was her. Okay, fight. I fought real hard. It's your turn. Because that did that. $100 million raised in one weekend. That's crazy. Yeah. That's crazy.
We didn't even mention that on this episode. I know we talked about it yesterday during Broad Topics, but that's really something amazing and we shouldn't lose sight of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that she realized that the power of the people was the only thing left at this point. And I don't even know where that will go. And it might not win the fight for the seat. I don't know.
There are other, the seat gets filled. There are other things. There are other avenues we can pursue.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Anyway, thank you, Andy, for that. Thank you, everybody, for listening today. We appreciate it. Thank you to the patrons that listen today, and thank you to the patrons in general that support us. If you have a dollar or two to kick our way and you would like to become a patron, you can go to patreon.com/JandJack or go to jandjack.com and click on the Become a Patron link on the top right-hand corner of the page. If you'd like to shop through the Amazon affiliates link, that's great too. And that would be jandjack.com/Amazon. It has to be all lowercase letters. If you would like to submit feedback, we love your feedback. We love feedback. Thebroadcasters3@gmail.com or 331-276-2373. Let us know what's going on. I mean, we're getting closer and closer to the end game. No, we're in the end game now. We're in it. we love to hear what you're thinking. Anything that you've got for us in general. If you would like to join us on the next Broad Topics, we will be meeting on Monday. The plan is Monday, October 5th at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. I set a timer for an hour. Sometimes we go a little bit over like last night, but generally we try to keep it pretty tight to be mindful of everybody's time, especially on a night where it's going to start a little bit later than usual. And I'm sorry about that. That is totally my fault. But we would love to have you join us. The Zoom link is posted, in the Facebook groups and on the Patreon page. So please check that out. Thank you to the patrons that contribute a certain level. And that would be Greg the Gray, who is in the chat right now. Tack from Tokyo, Eckhart Rickner, Maggie the Magnificent, Joanne with a Plan, and Ed the Creepy Mailman. Thank you guys so much. We really, really, really appreciate it. Especially in, these crazy 2020 times. So thank you. I will take us out with my Alex story. So I picked Alex up today and his teacher was like, Alex, do you want to tell mommy? And he goes, I made pee-pee on the potty. I made poo-poo on the potty. So essentially, he was 100% today for pee-pee and poo-poo on the potty. Nothing got into the pull-up. And she told me that starting tomorrow, we can pack underwear so she can start underwear training him. And he's 2.5. 2½. So this little child who didn't even exist when this show began is getting potty trained.
That's awesome. Congrats. That is a real accomplishment.
Yeah. Really excited. So we know it's not going to be a done deal like tomorrow. It's probably going to be another month or so before he's like fully on it, and we're going to work with it at home. But when we were in Target on Saturday, he actually told us that he had to go poo-poo. So Jay took him into the family restroom, and Zach and I finished getting all the stuff that was on the list. And a little bit of it had, by the time we got there, slipped into the diaper. So we didn't have the diaper bag, though. So, Jay was like, all right, Alex, you're going commando. And
don't fuck it up.
Yep.
Pretty much.
We trust you, buddy.
So he did. And he did great. And, Zach actually has outgrown some of his, underwear. So he just needed new underwear in different sizes. So, we went to get that for him. And Jay was like, hey, why don't we get Alex some underwear and see where he stands? Because if he's telling us he has to poop in the middle of a department store, then, we're close to underwear. And yeah, so here we are, 4 days later. Very Perfect. Exciting. So we'll
That's
see.
Awesome. That's yeah. Great. That's really
yeah.
great.
Yeah. A little kid that used to nurse while we were recording.
Aw. Doing poo-poo in the potty.
Doing poo-poo in the potty.
It's the greatest words ever. Anyway, thanks for listening. On that note, my name is Khalid.
My name is Amanda.
And I'm Shandy.
Peace out, everybody. Have a good week.
Bye.
Bye.
Don't let the bastards get you down.